Hey guys, we're going to have some fill-in-the-blank stuff for you. I don't want you to miss it, so now's a great time to grab a pen and get your booklet out. Think about this. Why did we start tonight with worship? It's the same reason you guys, probably everybody, started last Sunday with worship, because worship prepares your heart. Worship opens you. And let me give you some stuff to write down here. We know this. Okay? No matter how good the music is, no matter how good the preaching is, only the Holy Spirit can change a heart. And nothing focuses the heart to hear His voice quite like worship does. That's why it's important. It's why it's one of the values of your church. If music, and here's the deal, because if music is far down your list of God-given talents, crafting a great worship experience like we had tonight is going to feel like an unclimbable mountain. You're just like, nah, I don't know. Maybe I can hire somebody. The good news is, it doesn't have to be. Okay? I want you to write this down or remember this for tonight for worship. Your goal is to inspire people, not to impress them. We all want worship that's awesome. We all want worship that the other churches in town are like, man, if I could only get worship like the Assemblies of God. That's not our goal. Our goal is to inspire people, and that's good news, because that you can do. Okay? Like Moses with his staff, you can use what's already in your hand. Start small. Keep things simple. We're going to give you simple first steps that you can use. You can walk out of here tonight and you can start doing those things. Keep it simple, because simple, write this down, simple done well beats complex done poorly every time. Okay, we're going to give you simple things that you can plug in, you can start using them, and you can start raising that experience this Sunday.
We'll start way down at the bottom. The building blocks of your worship service are your volunteers. Many of you may not have a worship pastor on staff. You may have a volunteer worship leader, especially important for those churches. Take care of your volunteers, guys. Yes. Take care of each and every single volunteer. Lots of our musicians in our churches, I'm getting waved at. Okay, well, I will direct that to Andrew Schneider. He will fix that immediately. I'll try to speak a little bit clearer. No matter the size of your team or how many musicians you have, even if you have one vocalist or one guitar player, make sure you take care of them. I am a volunteer at my church. My worship pastor takes great care of me, guys. Sometimes she makes me dinner. I've gotten her to mow my lawn before. She's very nice to me all the time. It might be cheating. My worship pastor is my wife. So I don't expect you to be going to every volunteer's house. But the point stands. Please take care of your volunteers. This can be as simple as sending a thank you from time to time. A real heartfelt thank you. If you're not one to send letters, I never remember to send actual physical letters. Send a text. I've gotten those texts before. Hey, really appreciate you, man. So appreciate the job that you do. That's really, really meaningful, especially for someone who does it all the time. I lead worship 1 to 2 times almost every single week, and sometimes you don't get thanked, but it makes those extra little thank yous so, so meaningful. Text every person on your team, the bass player, even if they didn't show up to rehearsal, they still deserve a thank you. Host get-togethers for your team. This is a often overlooked one. We get really, really busy, but make sure you're carving out time to gather with your volunteers, not in a ministry setting. We did this just a few months ago with our worship team, and it was very, very cool. Most of us on the team gathering at our house for a couple of hours, just making some hot dogs, having some fun. It really brings the team together, and it shows that you care about them outside of the service that they perform. Yeah. Amen? Yeah. We need to appreciate the people, not the product.
And there were like 25 people, so it's not like it was just an easy thing, like, oh, we'll just grab some snacks and whatever. We put effort into it because we wanted our team to know that we appreciate them enough to cook them a meal and enough to have them come over and just hang out and play games with us. So it's super important.
Absolutely. Make sure that your worship team, I would highly encourage this, send them a gift at the end of the year. A $10 gift card goes a long way, and it's not that expensive, especially if you have a small worship team. If you got two musicians, you're 20 bucks out, and you have built up a lot of goodwill for yourself throughout the year. And then lastly, this is probably my most contentious point. This will be especially difficult for those of you, maybe not difficult, but a bit of a mental hurdle, if you will, especially for those of you in smaller churches with smaller teams. Like I said earlier, oftentimes it's the same team every single Sunday. Find a way to give them a break. Yes. So that they are not serving every single Sunday. If that means bringing in a guest worship leader or a worship evangelist or just another team, find some way to give them a break. I know several of you probably maybe play guitar or play piano, and I know you don't want to lead the song set also. Our Pastor Eric over at Cornerstone has led for us once or twice. And he's actually quite good. For those of you who do not know, he plays guitar and he sings.
So if you need a worship pastor.
You can call Pastor Eric at Cornerstone and he will come out and guest. No, he won't. He didn't ask me to say that. But find a way to give them a break. Because probably what's happening is they're on their 12th straight week of serving in your church, and they love it, they will do it, but give them a break. That brings me to my second best practice that I have for you. Play to your team's strengths. Not every team is the same. 99% of teams out there are not Hillsong. They are not Maverick City. They are not even the big church down the road. You have your team in your church, and that's okay. You might have pro-level volunteers. You may have someone who can barely rub two notes together and get a nickel. I have been in both situations, playing with pros and playing with people who are doing their best. Even those people have strengths. I have a personal connection to this point. I was serving in a church a number of years ago, and the contemporary worship team, they had a traditional service and a contemporary service. And the contemporary worship team just struggled to make worship happen. It didn't sound like natural to them, trying to play, you know, the Hillsong and the Bethel and the Elevation and all that. And they played a Big Daddy Weave tune one Sunday. And that was the best I have ever heard that band sound. It filled the room. Worship was happening. The Spirit was moving on Big Daddy Weave. Now, I am not suggesting that you go home and you play strictly Big Daddy Weave tunes. The point I'm trying to make is your team has a strength. You may not even have an electric guitar player, but maybe you have a great acoustic guitar player. Find some worship or some versions of worship songs that are a little more acoustic driven, maybe even bluegrass. There are some great bluegrass arrangements of worship tunes. I'm thinking right now, Elevation, My Testimony. Great song. They do a bluegrass version. Try it out sometime. You may be floored the talent and the passion that is inside of your worship team right now, but it's not being unlocked because they keep trying to play a style that is not their best, but they have a best within them. The same church that I was working at had that traditional service, and I watched over time as the traditional service at 8 o'clock in the morning began to grow and the contemporary service began to die. They're exactly the same service, only the music is different. The traditional worship service had a worship leader who had been in that position for a long time, and he had a piano player and an organist who had been with him for a long time, and they were in a choir. It was very cool. It was very well done. It was well produced. Not maybe the style that is popular right now, but it worked in that service. And I watched as that service began to grow in young families. People started dragging their kids out to the traditional worship service. Now, the point is not that traditional is better than contemporary. I'd like to echo a point that Pastor Chris made for us, is that simple done well beats complex done poorly every time. I would say that style done well, strengths done well, beat lack of knowledge or maybe just lack of skill in a particular style. Not everybody can play this, but maybe they can play this other thing over here. And learning how to leverage that and use that to move your worship program forward, maybe you need to start with songs from the early 2000s. I don't know, because that's what your worship team grew up playing. If you need to start there, that's okay. Lean into it. And then if you as leadership can use that as leverage to move your program forward, because you're beginning from a place of strength. Whereas if you keep hammering your team with things that they're not great at, they may get demoralized. And they may not feel like they're really contributing because they're getting this chord chart in front of them and they're used to playing lead sheets with notes on them. And as much as it personally might kill me to sacrifice the style that I want in favor of the team, come on, what are we here to do? We're in ministry. We sacrifice all the time. We have to give up the things that we want. And so I just want to encourage you today that there could be a worship that you want to happen in your church. Think about the worship that can happen in your church at this present moment and how your volunteers can play something that brings them to life. And then that excitement can lead into, hey, I'd like to try this other song. It's maybe out of your wheelhouse, but we're excited about our worship program. Oh, yeah, Pastor, I'd love to take a shot at that. I may not be able to nail every lick, but I will do my best. Amen?
All right, so number three. If you are the lead pastor, you are the lead worshiper. Yes, thank you. I think most of us know that the lead pastor sets the vision for the church, okay? And so if you're lead pastor, if you are a lead pastor and you're sitting on the front row like this during worship time, during musical worship time, that just ain't gonna cut it, okay? I have played at churches where the lead pastor wants this vibrant worship time and they want help. And as we start leading worship, they're dead as a doorknob. And it's not about personality there, but it's like, dude, you are not helping me. And so if you are a lead pastor, you are a lead worshiper. I grew up in a very small church. When my dad got there, who's a pastor, wave hi, Mom and Dad. Bet y'all didn't know they were old enough to have me. When we got to our church 15 or so years ago, me and my siblings were the only kids, no kids, that's how small it was. And, but I'll tell you what, something that my dad's church has never lacked is an attitude and a heart for worship, even when they had nothing. Me and my husband have gone several times to lead worship for them in the last year, and we're always amazed at how hungry and how willing they are to just step right into it, because they're not just worshiping when we're there and when the worship, you know, maybe is a little more than they normally have. They're worshiping all the time because my parents, my mom and my dad, as the lead pastors of that church, have set a culture of worship. They've worshiped in front of their people, and so their people like to worship vibrantly and exuberantly. And so just know that it is so important. You have a role. I mean, you might have a hired worship pastor. I'm a worship pastor, and I'm really thankful that my pastor, Pastor Eric, gives me a lot of freedom to set my own vision for the worship time, but also my pastor tells me what his vision is for the whole service, for the whole worship time. And so if you have a worship pastor, it's important for you to talk through with them what the vision for worship is and kind of vision cast what you want, even if you don't have a worship pastor, but with your team, obviously keeping in mind some level of expectations, but that's really important. And if you don't have a worship pastor, it's really, really important for you to set that culture of worship, even if you're not on stage during that time. My pastor, every week, I hear him worshiping, and I see him on the floor raising his hands and sometimes going to the altar because, not because he's a sinner, but because he knows that in order to lead, we have to lead by example. If we want people to do, we must also do, okay? So that's a super important point. I cannot, like, if I thought any of these points was the most important, I think this one is the most important. Because a lot of times we want to push it off on our volunteers. Well, our volunteers just don't do this, and our worship leader just doesn't do this. You set the culture. You set the vision. And so it's a big job, and it's a really cool job, and it's a really hard job. But we're thankful for you lead pastors because you do it well. So that's that.
Awesome. And let me just tag on to that best practice. I've been a volunteer worship leader. I've been a full-time music pastor. Now I'm a lead pastor. Okay, I know how both sides of this deal are. And guys and girls out there who are getting ready to preach on Sunday, I know in that moment, you got 100 things on your mind, and you're thinking, and you're like, no, I got to stay in the zone. Push back on that. What Abby's saying is absolutely true, and you're going to feel the need to, no, I have to stay focused. You do need to stay focused, but if you're prepared properly for your sermon, you don't have to panic there. Just enter into worship. Be a lead worshiper. Hey, let me give you, we got two more. Here's the next one. Learn how to leverage technology. Learn how to leverage technology in your worship. One of the reasons that we started worshiping the way that we did tonight was because we wanted to show you what's possible with technology that you might already have in your church. Okay, we started with three singers, three microphones, and an iPad. You could run the same thing off of a phone. And here's the great thing. When we're all singing, when we're all engaged in this, when we're actively worshiping on the stage, we're creating this experience for people that you don't have to have the full band behind you. We did that using loopcommunity.com. In fact, let me give you a couple things. You can write these down in your notes. A couple places to check out. Loopcommunity.com is one where you can get backing tracks like that. It'll have a click track, so your band, if you have headphones on or something, so you can hear, and they'll say, okay, ready, verse, two, three, four, so you know where to go. And everybody out in the house, they hear the whole arrangement. They're like, wow, this sounds great. Whoa, worship was so good. Loopcommunity.com, another one that I've used before that I like is multitracks.com. You can write those down. You can buy songs and slowly add those to your library. Okay. Great. Here's another one that we use that I think is great. Song Select by CCLI. Okay. So write Song Select on there. You can Google that. CCLI has a service so that if you want to get chord charts for your team, you don't have to try to make them in Word. Or I don't know if you've ever done this, if you've ever gone and like tried to Google chord chart for something and it's like way, way wrong. You get the service with them. You can license it. You can use it. It's awesome. We also, and I know many of you already use it for a lot of things, but planningcenter.com is also a huge one to look at and write down. It's a great way to get the information that your worship team needs out in advance because we want them to practice at home, but if we don't give them materials to practice with, we can't really fault them for not doing it. And there are a whole bunch more, and if we've got time in the Q&A, we'd love to get into some of the nitty-gritty with you. But the overriding thing that I want you to get is that there's technology out there that will help you, and it is not beyond your ability to learn, okay? I want you to imagine the scenario. Imagine that I gave all of you homemade chocolate chip cookies, and you tasted this cookie, and you said, Chris, I think this is the best cookie I've ever tasted. How in the world did you make this? And I said, well, I got a new KitchenAid blender. It's awesome. Okay? And so you tell your board, we need a KitchenAid blender. Okay? How many of you know buying a better tool doesn't help you if you don't know how to use it? Okay? But if you've ever made cookies, anybody ever use a KitchenAid? They're awesome, right? They certainly make it easier. Okay? Don't just say, well, we need to go out and get technology, and then you get it, and you're like, well, I got it. Okay, learn how to leverage technology. Here's the cool thing. There's not a person in this room that can't learn how to use a kitchen. I'm not a rep for KitchenAid. Okay, who can't learn how to use a blender. Okay, you can grab a friend who knows how to use it. You can go on YouTube and learn how to use it. And I'm telling you right now, the technologies, the stuff that we use tonight, there's not a person. Listen. There's not a person in this room that can't learn how to use it. You are intelligent, capable people, and you say, well, I'm not good at cell phones. Okay, find someone who is, and don't say you learn it. You as the leader also get acquainted with it and learn how to leverage the technology. You can do so much more with the tools that are available to you. And again, during the Q&A, if you want, we'd be happy to talk with those or talk with any of us right after, okay? One more best practice to write down, okay? So grab your pen and paper. Here's an easy one. You can start this Sunday. You can do this, and it will help you. I guarantee it. Always end with a familiar song. Always end your worship service with a familiar song. Here's why. You guys have noticed this, all right? Some of you, you've talked to your worship team, and you've ringing your fist. So what do we do? That, like, the first song, half of the room is empty because the people are still out in the lobby getting coffee, or they're still checking their kids in, or they're still trying to figure out which door you want them to come in, okay? And we all know this because it's you two, right? Sometimes it takes a while to sort of warm your soul up in worship. It just takes a little while to get it ready to enter that time. And usually, by the time that folks have been in there, and by the time that if we're leading well, and if we're doing these things, and if our heart's in it, eventually they get to this point, they're like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to engage. I'm ready to just close all the other distractions out and lean into the Lord. But then if you get to that moment, and it's like, hey, surprise, new song. And it's one of those new songs where your pro presenter person's getting blisters from clicking because it's so many words and click, 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 click. Okay. You're just not helping people to enter and engage in worship. So here's what I would recommend, okay? Find a song that's familiar. It's, well, Pastor Chris, oh, maybe we've done this song too much. Listen, find something that's familiar to people. Here's what I like to do, and I encourage folks who are leading worship, whatever we end with, let it end as something that someone could close their eyes and sing along with, okay? Maybe find a chorus and just repeat it. Find that bridge. It doesn't even have to be a song. You could say, well, we kind of need to end with this new song. Well, then come back and sing, name above all names, worthy of all praise. Find something as familiar, because ultimately what we want to do is we want to create an environment where people lean into the Lord in worship, where they open their hearts. Coming back to our original thought, our goal is not to impress people. And I'm so glad that big churches like Hillsong and Elevation have created, all of these great songs, and they have these great worship videos, and some of you guys have maybe done this. You know, you've pressed play, and you've brought your team together, and you said, that, we need to be that. Come on, we need to look like that. Well, guys, that's not even what Hillsong looks like on Sunday mornings, okay? That's not even what Elevation looks like on Sunday. That's like going to your teenage daughter and grabbing the fashion magazine and saying, why can't you look like this, okay? It's not, no. The idea is not to be so awesome at this. The idea is, we want to inspire people, and I don't know if you noticed this, but we prepared our worship set. We started with just vocals and music. We did all this other stuff, and we came back down at the end. We were just singing. It was just voices, and you don't have to have, because I know this, that some of you guys are here, and you're thinking as you're hearing this, you're like, man, if we just had that worship team on Sunday mornings, we'd blow this stuff up. We'd double in size. Okay, and that's great, but you don't have to have that to inspire people. You don't have to have that to encourage people to engage. So be a lead worshiper from the stage and take care of your volunteers and figure out what your team is good at and just say, start there. Well, they're only good at hymns, Pastor Chris. And we'll start with the hymns. Start with what they're good at. Because you can have a great worship experience in your church, even if it's just you and the iPad. So if there's one thing to walk away with from tonight, from the worship experience, you can do this, all right? And we will help you. We want to help you. So with that in mind, we want to take a few minutes before we move on to the next section for question and answers. So Andrew's going to run a microphone around. If any of you guys have questions, now's the time. Raise your hand. We'll answer as best we can. We're bringing a mic to you. That way the folks at the back can hear.
Obstacles, sorry.
All right. When you start off worship and you have babies all the way through elderly who can't hear, and the kids don't know the songs, and some of the adults don't know the songs, and even people who know the songs don't sing, how do you deal with that so that everybody gets involved in worship?
Good question. First thought is you want songs that people know. And so I would encourage, especially if you're in the we don't have a great system and we need to build a system, I would start with a smaller playlist because it helps you a lot if people know the songs. And even at the risk of I've done this song a lot in the last 6 months, we overestimate how much people know it because they're here every 2 or 3 weeks. Here's a great resource. You're not going to expect this one, but listen to Christian radio, okay? And if there are worship songs on there, odds are if you play that song, if you introduce a new song that people have heard on the radio, a lot of them are going to know it, and people are so much more ready to sing when they're like, oh, I know this song, even if it's like, oh, I've heard this song before. Here's another tip. If you know some new songs that you want to teach soon, put those on your pre-service playlist and on your after-service playlist, because there's this amazing thing that happens, even if you're not paying attention to it, if you've heard a song in the background a few times, and then the worship leader says, hey, we got a new song for you, it's a lot easier to lean into that. That is tough, and that opening song, it's just hard, okay? So just understand that first song, the people are still finding their seat. Give them some grace to say, we're going to let them ease into the worship time, but we want to do what we can to help it be familiar.
I'd love to add briefly to that. I'm sure this room tonight is the easiest room to lead because we could almost not sing, and we know that you would, because every single one of you is glad to be here. You're personally engaged in the worship time. And how many know that's not most of our church members? They show up, they're barely awake. Many times it seems like they're not even engaged. It is a balance, but I would encourage any one of you, especially if you're the worship leader, or you can encourage your worship leader to do this. Use your position on the stage and the microphone in your hand. Take command of the room. Tell the people what to do. Show them what to do. And so if I was to say, why don't you lift your hands? I'm going to lift my own hands. If I'm going to tell that, if I want them to celebrate in worship, I'm going to smile. I'm going to celebrate. And I'm going to crank that dial to 11. Because how many know, if you've ever been in theater before, the 11 on stage translates to like a 7 by the time it hits the back of the room. So whatever you're wanting the people to do, do not be afraid to, I almost hate to use the word, but command it. Or at the very least, ask them. I'm asking my church all the time, would you lift your voice and sing with me? I say it just like that. Would you lift your voice and sing this chorus with me? I will say it just like that. Because I have to assume that people either do not know what to do or they're afraid to do it. And the second you ask everyone to do it, now nobody's feeling like, oh, I'm gonna do this thing and I'm gonna look weird. It's like, no. The worship leader just told us all to do it. So there's a pretty good chance that I'm gonna blend right in. Does that make sense? Take command of your room.
Andrew, we have a gentleman in the back.
Let me just throw this at you. Hey, really enjoyed the session so far.
Thank you.
Question, am I too loud?
You're great.
Wow.
Killing it, bro.
Some people say we can actually hear. Okay, so I'll bring it back. What is a suggested timeline for when you should bury a song? You know, every church has that one song. It's like, if you sing it again, I'm not tithing anymore. So what does that timeline look like? And then part two of that question, this is a separate question, is how are we bridging? You spoke a lot about the different generations, that 10 o'clock crowd, more traditional, and then that contemporary crowd. What is the turnkey solution to make us sticky for both generations? How are we marrying that?
Yes. So as far as the how to bury a song, just bury it. If you're, I would recommend, don't be afraid to bring it back every now and then, like, and so that people can be like, oh, I remember this. It's an, and then it becomes nostalgia, right? So if people are complaining about a song being done too much, or you feel like it's been done too much, I would say you could probably go ahead and make the decision. I don't know if there's any specific timeline, but if you feel like it's been overdone, it's probably been overdone. But also there's a fine line of, like, we do want our songs to be familiar because we want people to join in. So I would say don't be afraid to make that decision and then bring it back when it's like, oh, I remember this song, you know, when it's been enough time. As far as bridging the generational gap, there's not like one specific answer, and nobody's ever going to be completely happy. That's just the reality of the situation. However, we need to recognize that we want our young Christians to mature, and we want to give them a space to do that, and we want our older Christians who are more seasoned to have a space that's that they're still, that they don't feel like we've left them behind. And so I think a really good solution, Pastor Chris kind of touched on this, is like ending with a familiar song. I often end with a hymn or a traditional chorus. I try to do one every week, and because it really means a lot to our older folks when they know that they've not been forgotten. And also sometimes it just helps a lot for them to like you as a pastor or as a worship leader. And so a lot of it is relational as well, making sure that, like, as a young worship pastor, I am really intentional about getting to know the older people in my church so that when they feel like they feel left behind, they can talk to me. And some of them have. They've said, Pastor Abby, I really wish we would do more of this. And either I can either say, you know what, we're going to do more, or I have a relationship where that I can explain to them what the process is. So there's no perfect solution to this, but I would say probably the best thing is just making a space for both, and having really good, as much as you can, relationship with the people in your church, old and young.
Great. Any other questions? Oh, there's one. It's the last one we have time for.
You guys have any soundboard resources or that you would suggest to help improve volunteers that are struggling with the soundboard?
I think definitely teaching. And I know this is going to sound like a cop-out. It legitimately is not. YouTube has some great stuff. And I would love to say, oh, you know, this paid subscription. There are some. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the name.
I think there might be one called, like, Worship University or Worship Leader University, if someone from my team is in here that can verify that. But it costs. There's a subscription cost, but it also sometimes they do have tutorial videos for soundboards. It just might depend on what type of soundboard you have. But like Pastor Chris said, just typing in the name of your soundboard on YouTube and saying, like, how do I work this? You should be able to find something.
I do have a particular resource that I myself have used. It's called productiononline.com. I think it's Luke Hendrickson out of Bethel.
Okay.
Does that. Here's my biggest recommendation for that. The board itself is not nearly as important as the theory going into that board. Every soundboard does basically the same thing. So far more important to learn the basics of what that soundboard is doing, not the particular soundboard itself. And so I would highly recommend a resource like Production Online, because they may not have videos on the Yamaha board that you have, but they do have videos on how to EQ, how to compress, how to use reverb. And so I would highly encourage whoever is running your church media, get really serious about learning the theory behind what's done at this board, because the board itself, whatever. Anybody can learn how to twist a knob and push a fader, but it's knowing why am I turning that knob. So I would highly recommend Production Online. Do the 30-day trial and then cancel it. Just watch every video.
There you go. All right.
Hey, come on. Give it up for this team, guys. Come on. They've done a great job.